Acoustics is a branch of marine science that deals with the generation, propagation, and reception of energy in the form of sound waves in the sea. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Practical use of underwater sound began after the turn of the century. Today, acoustics is applied in about every phase of marine science, and the use of acoustics allows us to use electronic ears to probe the depths of the sea. For example, bathymetry is determined solely with echo sounders, and the detection of submarines is accomplished primarily with sonars. Acoustic devices are also used to find fish shoals, to study the distribution and amount of plankton in the sea, and to study the behavior of all marine life by listening to the sounds that they make. Acoustics is also used to probe the sediments in the sea, both for mineral exploration as well as to acquire basic scientific information. It is also used to position drilling platforms and to study the effects of man-made sound on the creatures that inhabit the sea. One area of interest to marine scientists at the Institute of Marine Science is the study of sound, where it results from or influences the behavior of marine organisms. It includes the effect of natural and man-made sounds upon the behavior of aquatic organisms and inquiry into sound production or reception by marine mammals. Marine mammals produce sounds as a means of communication. In some species, sound is produced as a means of echolocation, for example, to find food sources. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Although the muskox has been around for centuries and is native to Alaska, very little confirmed data about muskoxen is available. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. For a variety of reasons, the muskoxen in Alaska were wiped out during the last half of the 19th century. The heavy woolly animals were reintroduced to Alaska from Greenland in the 1930s and brought to the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. In 1933, a herd of about 30 animals was moved to Nunavak Island. By 1960, there were hundreds of animals, of which many were relocated around the state. The University of Alaska Fairbanks got involved again in 1979, when 16 of the muskoxen were returned to campus for research. Scientists with the Institute of Arctic Biology are studying the animal to look at the underlying principles of the ecology of muskoxen to determine their basic nutritional needs. This pioneering research will be used to provide information for managing herds of healthy muskoxen. In the spring of 1981 and 82, muskox calves were taken from their mothers at 4 days of age. They were reared on a commercial milk diet developed for lambs. Body weight, milk intake, and change in body water and solids were regularly monitored. Significantly, growth rates showed no differences between the sexes, and they were actually higher than rates for wild populations. In addition, a high growth rate was maintained over the winter. Of the 5 hand-reared muskoxen, 2 of the 3 females are confirmed pregnant. The third is last year's calf and won't be bred until next spring. Importantly, this will be the first time scientists will be able to study both a cow and its calves together. The offspring will not have to be taken from their mothers and hand-reared. Both cow and calf should be manageable. In time, a hearty, manageable herd should evolve. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. The Farmers Loop sinkhole in Fairbanks gets as much media coverage as some of our politicians, but an engineering experiment to try and stop the sink is now underway. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. If you haven't hit the sinkhole on Farmers Loop while driving 35 miles per hour, you aren't familiar with Fairbanks. Each summer, if not several times a summer, road crews have had to patch the sinkhole that develops between College Road and the east entrance of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In some places, asphalt is 5 feet thick. In the past, correcting the problem has been difficult because the problem wasn't clearly understood. Only recently it was determined that rather than an ice wedge that melts a little each year, there is actually a massive frozen peat bog that is melting under the roadway. The sinkhole, therefore, is not one hole, but a continuously moving and thawing front of permafrost. The best guess is that the thawing is caused by warm groundwater flowing from the higher ridge that settles in the marsh area along the road. In the summer, warm rainwater and the heat absorbed from the sun shining on the black pavement combine to thaw the peat, which then subsides. An array of 9 tubes, or thermopiles, was recently installed. These thermopiles, or thermal tubes, are similar to those in the vertical support pilings along the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. These piles are one-way heat pumps designed to remove the heat from the ground in the winter to keep the ground around the sinkhole frozen year-round. This is the first experiment using thermopiles to stabilize a road. Similar tubes have also been installed under the Renway at Bethel, but it is too early to determine their success. Engineers are waiting until the summer of 84 to find out whether the refrigeration solution to the sinking of Farmer's Loop is a winner. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Because traditional theory held that wild dogs and hybrids could not survive in the harsh northern environment, it was thought feral dogs did not exist in Alaska. However, rumors began in 1976 suggesting the opposite. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. In 1979, a University of Alaska Fairbanks student conducted a survey among hunters, guides, and trappers to test the rumors. Information obtained resulted in a map pinpointing 26 locations in the state where feral dogs were thought to be. Dogs were defined as wild if they were totally independent of man. Scientists at the Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit decided to focus on the Delta area, where two packs had been observed, one which was frequenting the Delta landfill, a food source for everything from mice to bison and wolves. The first radio-transmitting collars were placed on 6 different dogs in this pack in 1979. Unlike their domestic cousins, the wild dogs do not depend solely on the female to care for a litter. A litter born in the fall of 1980, the worst possible time of the year, was cared for by the entire pack and all the pups survived. This behavior is characteristic of the wolves, coyotes, and foxes with whom the wild dogs interact. Over 1980 and 1981, several of the dogs were shot and killed. The 3 remaining are males. One is collared with a radio transmitter. What will happen to these 3 is uncertain. Alone now for 2 years, the males could mate with a coyote, a free-ranging dog, or perhaps even a wolf, if they survive. Research to date suggests that conditions in Delta have assisted in the development of a wild dog population. The clearing of land for agriculture and the increased human population in Delta are making an impact on the various canine populations. Wolves have been reduced, coyotes continue to increase in number, and the red foxes are threatened. The relationship among all the canines in Delta will require further research. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Alaska has the only area of accessible tidewater glaciers in the world. Because tidewater glaciers are temperate, there is an abundant breaking of ice off the face of the glacier that is truly spectacular. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. The tidewater glaciers, such as the Columbia, have become a regular stop for the students participating in the annual shipboard techniques class. For the past 3 years, the Division of Marine Sciences at the University of Alaska Fairbanks has offered a 2-credit course called Shipboard Techniques. Enrollment in the spring offering is limited, and interest in marine science is a must. The first time the course was offered, the state funded one day at sea on board the Institute of Marine Sciences research vessel, the Alpha Helix. This year, increased support from the state made 3 days at sea possible. Since the focus of the course is on how to analyze, the time at sea provides opportunities for students to collect bottom samples, take core samples, and test navigation skills. Students are also encouraged to pursue special interests, such as collecting plankton or taking ice samples. A faculty-student ratio of 3-to-1 and round-the-clock sample collecting, permit intensive learning. Although graduate students from other disciplines have participated in the previous year's courses, this was the first year upper-class undergraduates were permitted to enroll. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM.